From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is 91.3 KUAF, your radio source for great music like Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, The Pick and Post with Mike Shirkey, and Jazz Travels with Steve Wilkes, and your source for NPR News for more than 32 years. You can find schedules for all of our stations and all of our programs at KUAF.com. And this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, August 9th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on today's Ozarks, Senator John Bozeman says he thinks it will take bipartisan ideas to pass health care reform or tax reform in 2017. He discussed those topics and more with Roby Brock this week, and we'll hear part of that conversation in about 10 minutes on Ozarks. First, according to the National Science Foundation, women make up half of the total college-educated workforce in the United States, but only 29% of the science and engineering workforce. Initiatives encouraging young women to explore careers in STEM are launching across the country, and one such female-focused program wrapped up just a few days ago at the Scott Family Amazium in Bentonville. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
There's a ton of gears.
We need wire
cutters. Where are the wire cutters?
As summer vacation winds down, so too do summer camps. In July, the Amazium hosted a week-long STEAM camp for girls 6 to 11 years old. STEAM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Math. The young participants learned how to use tools like screwdrivers while moving through the design process to create a variety of projects. One morning, the girls were able to take apart electronic devices like a record player, a keyboard, and a VCR.
You have to take all the screws out first. That's the only way.
Oh my God. All right, I think we're going to maybe need...
The girls were mentored by a handful of local teens, including Lydia Smith.
I have a Lydia? Dog that loves to do what you're
Could
doing.
Could you help me find the right screw for these little ones?
Yeah.
And these
the
little
toys.
Ones. I'm getting off these things. They seem to be holding.
Lydia is one of five girls who participated in a new female-oriented initiative called the Maker Squad. That's Maker spelled M-A-K-E-H-E-R. Tinkering Initiatives manager Jason Quayle says a goal of the new program was to give participants access to all things STEAM.
They get to have access to our workshop, and they get to build and tinker whatever they want. Part of the project was that they had to take home something at the end of the summer. So we created some really fantastic kits with tools from electronics to woodworking to sewing. And with those tools, they also built their projects. And each one of them came up with a different project for the summer. Some of them completely different from each other.
The girls worked on their projects for about 2 months. Tinkering lead AJ Hart says at the start of summer, they had several skill building sessions.
We did like a day on textiles and did dyeing fabrics and a little bit of sewing, even and incorporated some electronics into it, made some e-textiles. We also had a day on circuits where we played with circuit blocks, we played with different Ozobots, makey-makey, different types of electronics. We did some tech take-apart. And then we did a day where we just kind of focused on smart tools, such as our laser cutter, CNC, and different power tools and things in the shop to kind of get exposure to all of those different tools so that as they were going through their process of developing their project and what they wanted to do, they knew what tools they had available to them.
Earlier this week, the girls were able to show off their finished projects at a special luncheon.
I'm Lydia Smith, and I'm 15. This is my cactus coffee table. It has cactus cutouts and then plexi on top. It's made out of pine wood. And then we cut it on a CNC machine and nailed it all together.
I'm Jasila Sayed. I'm 14 years old. I made an aquarium table. It's made out of plywood, pine, and acrylic. I used the table saw and the compound miter saw for this.
Susie Alvarez, and I'm 14. So I made a rocket bookshelf, and it's a rocket, and then it opens up into a bookshelf.
I am Emily Buchan, and I'm 13. I'm calling it Mirror Dress. It's really an odd name, but I kind of wanted a mirror for my room, and so long mirror so I could see the outfit, and I had a mirror for face. It's kind of too tall, but it kind of works.
The mirror is shaped like a girl wearing a dress and includes arms from which accessories can be hung. Emily's fellow Maker Squad member, Jade Horrigan, constructed a black ukulele whose neck has been programmed to light up in a rainbow pattern based on how she's playing. Jade's initial concept involved fire.
Jason said his friend built a flamethrowing ukulele, and I thought it would be really cool if I built one, but sadly we could not do any flames.
Tinkering lead AJ Hart says her role in the Maker Squad program was to help the girls refine their ideas. The teens often taught themselves new, useful skills, and there were several moments of growth throughout the summer.
There was an example where I was kind of working to encourage Jade as she was working on the programming with her ukulele, her sound reactive ukulele. And she turned to me and told me, I don't know how to do this. I'm not techie. In an effort to encourage her, I said, I'm not techie either. It's really more about being stubborn. It's just keep try it. Okay, that didn't work. Okay, let's try it again. It's perseverance. And so then when she had her breakthrough moment and figured out how to make the code all by herself, she did it. We I was out of the room and I came back in and she's like, look. And I'm like, and you're not techie. So that was a wonderful moment because she just smiled because, yeah, she did it.
A $22,000 grant through Cognizant's Making the Future initiative supported the Maker Squad program as well as the STEAM Camp. This education initiative seeks to inspire young leaders to pursue STEM disciplines by creating fun, hands-on learning opportunities. Director of Education Mindy Porter says it was very important for members of both groups to interact with one another.
A lot of the careers are being held by males, so there's very few opportunities for them to actually see a female in a career role. So it's hard for them to see themselves in that role if they aren't able to envision that by seeing somebody else. So that was a huge part of having Maker Squad being a mentor to the younger girls in the STEAMS girls camp, so that they could serve as that mentor and show the younger girls, look, I'm doing it. And then to see even farther with our team being here and showing that example as well. And we brought in outside guests, an architect and a chef and a business owner. They came in and shared as well. So they got to see females doing all sorts of STEAM in a whole variety of ways.
By providing camps just for girls, Porter says they were able to tailor the programming in a beneficial manner.
Girls often find that they need permission before it's okay for them to explore or to pick up a tool or to act on an idea or a question that they have. They often need verbal permission or cues that there's permission given. So that's something that's different with boys. Often they don't need that permission, and girls do. So there's subtleties like that that we were able to weave into this program where we gave them permission all the time and encouragement all the time and gave them great role models that they could follow.
Now that members of the Maker Squad have finished their projects, Porter says her team can debrief and discuss ways to improve the program. She says they hope to find funding so they can continue the Maker Squad initiative in the future. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I feel like nothing's really happening.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting it looser.
This is totally holding up.
The free lecture, Eclipses, Science, and Safety, will be presented by Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, Tuesday, August 15th at 6 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. Ahrens from the University of Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Science will discuss the science surrounding eclipses and share tips on how to safely enjoy the upcoming solar eclipse on August 21st. And don't forget to catch the weekly segment Scratching the Surface with Caitlin Ahrens each Friday at 2:04 on 91.3 KUAF. That's Inside Science Friday. And if you can't hear it then or happen to miss it on a Friday, we also have Scratching the Surface Inside Weekend Ozarks at Large that you can hear every Sunday morning at 9 on 91.3. And just a bit more science for this month, Prairie Creek Recreation Area on Beaver Lake will be the host site for the 12th annual Secchi Day this month. The event has, since its inception, grown into an all-day water appreciation science fair with music, giveaways, food, and more. There will be traditional Marshallese dance this year as well. There is still the activity that launched the day, of course, a citizen science activity of placing a black and white Secchi disc into different parts of the lake to measure lake clarity. Secchi Day 2017 will take place Saturday, August 19th. That's a week from Saturday at 9300 North Park Road. You can just put that into your GPS. It's just east of Rogers. The event, as always, put together by the Beaver Water District. You can find out many more details at bwdh20.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 2017 Fayetteville Roots Festival is August 23rd through the 27th. This festival of roots music, local food, and Ozark culture will feature a variety of free and ticketed community events in both Fayetteville and Bentonville. TheRootsFest.org for event schedule and more information.
Congress's summer slate is full. There is still conversation about altering the Affordable Care Act, consideration about the federal budget, concern about North Korea's nuclear capability, and continued discussion about tax reform. Earlier this week, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, reached Arkansas Senator John Bozeman in Washington, D.C. to discuss these topics.
Senator, health care has been a dominant issue for the last month or so. You guys have been right in the middle of all of it. There's still one GOP-only plan being efforted, the Cassidy-Graham plan, kind of provides block grants to the states for Medicaid funding. Number one, do you support that plan? And number two, do you think it has a chance?
Well, it's still a plan in the progress. I know that he met with many of our governors, including Governor Hutchison, in the last day or two. And so they're working together, trying to see if they can get governor support. In the meantime, though, also what's happening, Roby, is that you're having us go back to hearings. Senator Alexander from Tennessee, our neighbor, has started to have hearings. He'll be doing that probably for the next several weeks. Again, trying to get some support from some Democrats and see if we can get us in a direction where we make it such that we don't have these very high premiums, deductibles, co-pays, and the list goes on and on.
Is that the direction you'd like to see things go? Do you want to see a bipartisan approach to health care reform now that the GOP-only efforts have failed? Do you support where Senators Murray and Senators Alexander want to take the committee?
No, I support going to committee for lots of different reasons. You get a lot of discussion. The American public will understand better what's going on, the situation that we have. And then, too, you know, if somebody's got a good idea, I don't care if they're a Democrat or Republican, you know, let's get on with it. But we do have serious problems with the Affordable Care Act right now. And I think Senator Alexander is uniquely qualified to start to tackle that. It's 16-18% of our economy, really is a big deal. I don't mind at all taking time. People say, well, we got to do something. And I say, no, we've got to do the right thing. So again, it's okay for us to work through this.
The president has also talked about ending some of the insurance subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, which many say would crater the insurance markets that are already in a pretty fragile position. Others say that this is what's needed to hasten the end of Obamacare. Where do you stand on the president cutting off those insurance subsidies for the Affordable Care Act? Are you for or against that?
I think the president needs to go ahead and continue those as we work through this. The problem is that it not only affects Medicaid expansion and things like that, but it affects the individual market. So it's important that we stabilize that. I don't think any of us, though, long-term are for bailing out the insurance companies. That's not something that I want to do. That's not the answer. We've got to go beyond that and really get to the root problem as to what's driving up cost. But for the next, for the next few months, certainly, the president, I would advocate that he go ahead and make those payments so that we don't have significant increases in individual rates.
Let's move on to tax reform. This is another area where Senate Leader Mitch McConnell says he's going with GOP-only votes on this. He's going to try to find a way to get 50 votes for tax reform. 45 Democratic senators have said they want to work with Republicans on tax reform. All they have asked is just don't limit it to 1%, the tax cuts for the top 1%, and don't do anything that's going to blow up the deficit. Those seem like pretty reasonable accommodations. Why would there not be bipartisan approach to tax reform? Would you rather see that?
It's interesting. I think here recently, I just came out of a meeting with Senator Hatch, a number of other people, and the effort will be bipartisan. We're going to do this through the committee process, very open, and try and get Democrat support and just kind of go from there. But what we want to do is make it such that we provide some relief to the middle class, and everything really boils down to the economy, jobs, 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 and trying to get a bigger paycheck. I mean, that really is the bottom line. So that's what we're looking at in tax reform. And but my understanding is right now, Senator Hatch is going forward with hearings. Congressman Brady in the House, who's also very, very capable. Paul Ryan, who spent his real career, basically on tax reform. He's going to be working on this very, very hard also.
Has passed, as has the House. The president has signed, it seems somewhat reluctantly from the statement that he put out, a sanctions bill on Iran, on Russia, and on North Korea. Where do you think things stand with North Korea at this point in time? A lot of saber rattling going on, and quite frankly, it seems to me that there is not a good military solution to this, and we don't really have a strong diplomatic solution to it either. I'm a little bit puzzled as to what the administration and what a senator would recommend in terms of how we handle our North Korea problem.
Well, first of all, I was pleased that we actually got this bill passed that is strong sanctions on the Russians, strong sanctions on the North Korean and the Iranians. The president was hesitant about signing. I think that has to do more with presidential power, the ability to not have to do things related to foreign affairs, which we pretty much said, you know, you're going to do this. But that does, in his mind and the administration's mind, not just this, but President Obama, President Bush, whoever it was, you have situations where they feel like that diminishes their power. North Korea is a very, very difficult situation. As you point out, there's not any really good options. There's concern by the Chinese about something happening, refugees across the border. There's concern by the Chinese about the North and South at some point reuniting. There's concerns by the Japanese with the North Koreans being in such, that they're a nuclear power threatening them. What we don't want is nuclear proliferation all over Asia with the South Koreans and Japan, possibly Taiwan. So this is something that we need to take very, very seriously. And the good news is I think the Secretary of Defense is doing a good job. I think Secretary Tillerson is right in there also. And really are trying to provide us with all the options that are open. But again, as you stated earlier, it's difficult, and there's really not very many good ones out there.
U.S. Senator John Bozeman talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics, earlier this week. Senator Bozeman talked from Washington, D.C. You can hear more from the discussion at talkbusiness.net.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. Arkansas Manufacturing Solutions. Providing executive-level leadership and management consultative services to Arkansas companies in the areas of innovation, exporting, operational excellence, and sustainability. More information at mfgsolutions.org. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
And just ahead on today's show, Anita Paddock's new book, Closing Time, was not an easy project for the author.
And I cried while I was writing that scene, and I wasn't really sure. I didn't know Suzanne, and I wasn't sure how she spoke, what she said.
Anita Paddock discusses her book that chronicles a crime in Crawford County and the subsequent investigation from nearly 40 years ago. That's in just a few minutes on today's Ozarks at Large. Join Feed Communities for a live edition of the KUAF Vinyl Hour during the Vinyl, Vittles, and Vino benefit August 10th in Fayetteville. You can mingle with friends as you enjoy music from Vinyl Hour host Lee Wood, plus food and wine. All proceeds will go to support Feed Communities' mission in addressing hunger and food insecurity for families living in Northwest Arkansas. If you'd like more information, including location and registration, search Facebook for Vinyl, Vittles, Vino. And the Vinyl Hour with Lee Wood is Sunday evenings at 5 on KUAF 3. The final screening in the series of Arkansas-related films at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville is tonight. Mud will be shown. It will follow a discussion of independent cinema made in Arkansas since 1990. Mud, by the way, stars Matthew McConaughey, Reese Witherspoon, and the late Sam Shepard. The list of indie films in Arkansas in the last 30 years includes Sling Blade, Winter's Bone, and much more. The movie starts tonight at 8:30. The discussion takes place before the movie. All of it free. Registration requested at crystalbridges.org. A completely different kind of visual art, a mural, will be discussed a week from today at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. If you've ever been in the old Washington County Courthouse in Fayetteville, there's no way you could have missed the World War I mural that's in the lobby. It's 8 feet tall, 16 feet wide, created in 1920 after a fund drive coordinated by the Marion chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. They raised $1,400 for this mural. You can learn much more about the history of the artwork next Wednesday at the Shiloh Museum in downtown Springdale. That's when two members of the Marion chapter of the DAR will discuss the painting, its restoration, and more. It's a noon presentation. It is free. You can get more details at shilohmuseum.org. And you can take insights and sounds and history Saturday in downtown Siloam Springs. The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program, Main Street Siloam Springs, and the Siloam Springs Museum are all hosting a walking tour of historic sites in Siloam Saturday from 11 to 1. Mark Christ, who knows plenty about Arkansas history, will lead the tour that begins at 11 in front of the Crown Hotel. And for those of you much more familiar with 19th century Siloam Springs, that's the former Lakeside Hotel. The tour is absolutely free. And the legacy of Dr. Neil Compton will be celebrated Friday at Compton Gardens in Bentonville. He's credited with doing yeoman's work to make sure the Buffalo River was preserved and not dammed. It later became the nation's first national river. The day begins Friday at 9 with rock painting. The Amazium will host lawn games from 10 to noon. There will be a scavenger hunt, a screening of Larry Foley's documentary, The Buffalo Flows. And at 6:30 Friday evening, Still on the Hill will present a live version of their CD, Still a River. And that's just a bit of what's happening. It's all free, and it all takes place no matter the weather. The full schedule at the Facebook page for Dr. Compton Celebration.
On the next Fresh Air.
The next generation would be justified in looking back at us and asking, what were you thinking? Couldn't you hear what the scientists were saying? Couldn't you hear what Mother Nature was screaming at you?
We talk with former Vice President Al Gore about climate change and his new documentary, An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power. Join us.
Fresh Air, twice every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. If you lived around here in 1980, you might remember when Kenneth Staton and his daughter Suzanne were murdered at the Van Buren Jewelry Store owned by the Staton family. The crime rocked the city and the region. Kenneth Staton had established his store, the only jewelry store in Van Buren at the time, after years of hard work and living with rheumatoid arthritis. The crime, in the investigation that stretched from Crawford County to Atlanta to Florida and Canada, is the subject of the new book, Closing Time, by Anita Paddock. Anita was born in Van Buren and has lived in the Van Buren-Fort Smith area for years. She's taught creative writing, she's worked in the Fort Smith library system, worked in a bookstore, and taught American history. Anita's also written a previous book about a crime in the Arkansas River Valley titled Blind Rage. This week, I met Anita Paddock at the Fort Smith Library to talk about her latest book. She says this crime, the murders and the robbery, took formation when two men met for the first time a week earlier at a campground at Beaver Lake and decided to rob the store.
They scoped that out. They watched who drove the car, what cars, when they left, when they came. And so then they went on up to Beaver Lake and they were there camping when they met Richard Anderson and his girlfriend, whom had picked up at a carnival, and she was riding on the back of his motorcycle, and they were camping out at the same camping place, and that's where they met. And Peterson asked Anderson if he'd like to make some money, and Anderson said yes, because he only had $5 in his pocket, and he said yes, and they proceeded with their plan. And the reason Anderson was picked is because he had some transportation that was reliable, and Anderson had a motorcycle. Peterson's car was an old blue Cadillac that had something wrong with it, and they were pulling a camper on the back, and so that's why he was picked, and that's when they hooked up, which, of course, was the worst thing that could have ever happened to Anderson, because he wasn't the model citizen, but he came from a wonderful family. His daddy was an IBM engineer, and he was just a motorcycle guy who was pretty damn wild.
This is a true story, but for readers' sakes, I don't want to give too much away. But early, the murders in the book, the murders take place, and you recount as much as you can the final seconds of the victims' lives. How did you write that chapter?
That was a very hard chapter to write. In fact, it wasn't in the book I turned in to the publisher. I just couldn't bear to write it. I didn't want to write it because I didn't want to. The family, I interviewed the family, the mother and two sisters, and I at first told them I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to put that scene in the book. But my publishers convinced me that I needed to have it in there. And I agreed. I know that when I read true crime books, I like to know as much about it as I can. So I was convinced, and then I wrote the scene, and I cried while I was writing that scene. And I wasn't really sure. I didn't know Suzanne. And I wasn't sure how she spoke, what she said. I knew she was a teeny tiny little girl. I knew that she was a good student. She was going to school and working at her daddy's store. So I wrote some things out. And then her big sister, Karen, I asked her if she would read them and asked her, would your sister say this? Would your sister have said that? And there were some things that she had me change because she said, I don't think Suzanne would have said that. And so I changed because Karen was the closest person I had to know what her little sister would have said. I was given the opportunity to write it from either her point of view, Suzanne's point of view, or her daddy's. I knew well enough to know that I couldn't write a scene from a man's point of view. In the writing game, that's real hard to do, to write from the opposite sex. And so I knew I had to use Suzanne. And anyway, it was a difficult scene to write.
True crime books are popular, have been for a long time. They sell very well. You go back to Truman Capote and In Cold Blood. But many of the writers might be from a different place, and they hear about a crime and then they research it. You've written two now about where we are, where you are. What sort of line do you have to make sure? Because readers, either distance by time or geography, want to know, like you said, as much as possible. But you are writing about people you know and have known.
For me, knowing the people involved and how they reacted and how they lived, how they survived, that's more important than the crime as far as a reader goes. I've always, always loved true crime, and I was always more interested in why somebody killed someone, why that happened, And, you know, what did the family do later? How did they survive? And so that's what I liked, and that's just what I wanted to write about. And knowing the people involved just makes it easier. And I'm from Van Buren. I still have lots of friends who live in Van Buren. People are very, very willing and able to help me in my research.
We've had crime in this area before, the two crimes you've written about, and certainly since. Many of the crimes that involve fatalities tend to be familial, family or something like that. What is very disturbing about the crime detailed in Closing Time is it wasn't that. It was premeditated. This jewelry store was staked out. It's the kind of crime that I think for some of us is the scariest because it is nothing that the victims can do about it.
Right, nothing that they can do. And Mr. Staten had always insisted that there be two people at Closing Time. He had always told the people who worked there, don't cause any trouble. If we are ever robbed, you just give them what they ask. He did not keep a gun in the store. He said he didn't want to hurt anybody. He wouldn't want to kill anybody. And so I guess in a sense they had thought about it, and I suppose every jewelry store in America, in the world, thinks about it. That was their plan, and these people chose Closing Time because that's when they would be emptying the cash drawer, they'd be loading up the jewelry, they'd be all busy getting ready to put everything in the back room and the safes. They had two safes back in their back room and their work room. And so that was just a bad time, and these robbers knew it.
One of the keys for the investigation to find the men who committed the murders is a woman who didn't particularly like to talk to police, but she really spurs the investigation on and leads to the capture.
I wish I could find her. In fact, this morning I had a really good source of information looking for her. I'd like to find her and hug her neck and say, lady, I know it was embarrassing for you to have to admit what happened, but if you had not come forth and told the police what you knew, those guys would have never, ever been caught. But I can't find her. I wish I could. The Statons would like to, but I don't know where she is now.
I'm sure, now with two, first it was Blind Rage, now Closing Time, I'm sure you're getting people at book signings and other things saying, hey, you know what you ought to do. I'm sure there's no end of suggestions for what a third book or a fourth or a fifth should be.
Well, at the time that these two crimes happened, the Blind Rage and the Closing Time, there was another crime, and I feel like I just have to do it. It involved four people who were killed and murdered, and their bodies found in Van Buren in the Kibler Bottoms. And so there again, I have to gather up information and see if I can do it. And then I need to talk to the people, the victims, and see if they will talk to me. And so I'm in the process of doing that now. But because of going to all these book signings and people saying, you know, as I'm signing one book, someone's saying, well, what's your next book going to be? So I've already told them this is my plan. So people are coming out and saying, well, I knew so-and-so, and I was in nurse's training with one of the victims. And so I keep gathering up information, and I said, well, write it down on a little sheet of paper. So I've got a basket on my desk at home full of little scrap sheets of paper that when I'm through doing all of my book signings and for closing time, I'll start gathering those up and start calling on people.
I'm talking with Anita Paddock about her latest book, Closing Time, The True Story of Robbery and a Double Murder in Van Buren. Okay, so now I'm going to make a suggestion for your fourth book. Or actually, I'm just very curious about what the feeling was, the zeitgeist in Van Buren in this 18 to 24-month period when three sensational crimes happened in a small town that, given its rough Western legendary history, was still a high homicide rate. Do you have any recollection? Did people think it was the town was going downhill?
Yesterday, when I was at a book signing in Van Buren, when I got through talking, this first thing one lady said, and she was a school teacher. She and I had gone to high school together, so I knew her. And she said, "Well, I'll tell you what I did. I bought a gun." I said, "You bought a gun?" And then I asked the crowd, I said, "Were you all scared when all this happened?" And everybody, well, not everybody, because not everybody was living in Van Buren then, but a whole lot of people nodded their head yes. They were afraid because in a nine-month period, these horrendous murders had happened in their hometown, Van Buren, Arkansas, which really was a peaceful little town across the river from Fort Smith. People, you know, if you went out to eat or if you went to the movie, you went to Fort Smith. But here Van Buren was, and so people were afraid. They were really afraid. Ruth Staten told me that at that night of the murders, that there were people just milling in their front yard, just people who just, they didn't know what to do, they didn't know what to think. They just went to their yard and they just stood around in little knots of people, some crying and the men, you know, mad and they just didn't know what was going on with this town and how could this happen. It really did frighten people.
I read Carl Hiaasen and Elmore Leonard and several other crime writers that write about fictional crimes, and it'll take me a while to get through the book because I'm busy. When I get to something like Closing Time, True Crime, I usually read it in a day. So you have people who read what took you months or longer to write in a day or two, and then they're ready for the next one. That would seem to be quite the challenge. Like you said, the person at the book signing, what's next?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's just the name of the game. And I just, you know, I want to say, would you just let me enjoy this? But I don't, because I'm writing a book.
I was going to say, no writer has ever said, please don't read my books.
Yeah. I'm saying, you know, and I'm writing my name on this book, and they're asking me what's next. And so then I lift up my pen, and I say, well, you remember those crimes and the bodies were found in Kibler? Oh, yes. I know so-and-so. My ex-husband worked at such and such, you know. I'm gathering information. And here in Crawford County, the county in which I was born and grew up, I'm finding all sorts of people who do indeed read my book in one day, and they tell me that, and they, oh, I loved your book, I read it in one day. That seems to be like they're happy to say that, and I'm happy that they read my book in one day, and I suppose I really thought about saying, do you realize how long it took me to write that? I'm glad that they can pick up a book of mine and read it and not put it down and think, oh, I'll read this later, or I'll save this for next summer when I go to the beach.
Any idea what kind of play the book has beyond Crawford County, the Arkansas River Valley, Northwest Arkansas, where maybe people have never even heard of Van Buren?
Well, I don't know about Closing Time, But I do know about blind rage. I do know that it was in the international cellar. This winter I got an email, or I guess it was a Facebook message, from a lady in Michigan, and she had checked out Blind Rage at her library in Michigan, and she called and she wrote to tell me how much she loved it. And I thought, man, that is the coolest thing. My book is on a library shelf in Michigan.
Well, the name of the book is Closing Time. Anita Paddock, congratulations. I'm not going to rush you, but when the third book is out, we'll meet here again at the Fort Smith Library. How's that?
That'll be great, Kyle. That will be great. And I got to do it, and I'm hopeful that I'll be able to. And, you know, I'm in the twilight of my life here, so I thank you very much. I hope to see you in about 2 years.
Anita Paddock's new book is titled Closing Time. You can find out much more about her and her books at anitapaddock.com and at her Facebook page. Our conversation took place earlier this week in the Carnegie Room at the Fort Smith Public Library System's main library. In case you
didn't know. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Country singer Brett Young was going to be a baseball player until he was sidelined by an elbow injury.
There's a large amount of depression that goes along with, you know, a career-ending injury like that when you think it's going to be your whole life. And music, just at the very beginning of it all, became kind of an outlet for that.
Brett Young, that's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. A new study places Benton County at the top of a list of the healthiest counties in Arkansas. Smart Asset released the study this morning that suggests living in Benton County makes purchasing life insurance more affordable because it is the healthiest place to live in the state. Washington County was ranked 4th, Boone 5th, and Polk County 7th. Benton County has the lowest rate of adult smokers in Arkansas, just under 19%, and the lowest rate of adult obesity, just over 28%. Washington County, by the way, has the second-best ratio of primary care physicians per 100,000 residents, as well as the second-best rate when it comes to uninsured residents. Benton and Washington counties rank first and second in the fewest lives lost before age 75 per 100,000 residents. Nationally, Benton County is ranked as the 712th healthiest county in the United States. The politics of public health will likely be at play as the state moves forward with studying pregnancy-related deaths. Arkansas has the third highest rate of women who die during pregnancy or delivery, according to the United Health Foundation. That's prompted a study into the matter. But the lawmaker working on that study, Democratic Representative Greg Letting of Fayetteville, says it's hard to study maternal mortality without delving into a larger debate, the dispute over expanded roles for nurses. Nurses have been asking for more autonomy so they can cover doctor shortages or a lack of access to care in rural Arkansas.
During every legislative session, there are some pretty fierce battles about scope of practice. Nurses would like to see their roles expanded, and doctors see that as, in a lot of times, they see that as the nurses stepping onto their territory. So I don't want the study to become a vehicle for any one group to advance its own agenda.
Representative Letting says it will be important to discuss whether expanded roles for nurses could indeed lower pregnancy-related deaths. He's working on forming a maternal mortality review committee and says he hopes to have results of the study in the coming year. A dispatcher with the Bentonville 911 Communication Center is being recognized with a national honor for her work with a mother in labor, as well as additional work that same week with an injured firefighter. Stormy Matura was given the International Academies for Emergency Dispatches Call of the Week Award for her service that included guiding a father-to-be through a delivery process over the course of just under 3 minutes that ended with a successful delivery. Stormy will be formally honored tomorrow afternoon at the Bentonville Police Department Community Room. A new study by the American Road and Transportation Builders Association finds that roughly 6% of bridges in Arkansas are structurally deficient. Daniel Breen with our partner station KUAR in Little Rock has more.
Talk Business and Politics reports 2016 data from the Federal Highway Administration indicates that over 800 bridges in the state are in need of repair or replacement. The bridges designated as structurally deficient were found to have key elements, such as the deck, superstructure, or substructure, in poor or worse condition. Department of Transportation spokesperson Danny Stracely says that while the bridges are considered structurally deficient, they're still safe. He says the majority of the bridges are in rural areas of the state, and 80 of them are scheduled to begin replacement by 2020.
A conference devoted to the restoration of historic theaters takes place tomorrow and Friday at the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute on Pettigean Mountain. The keynote address will be delivered by the president and CEO of the League of American Theaters, based in Maryland. Programs involving historic tax credits, preservation grants, and technical assistance for preservation projects are also on the agenda. A vast collection of historic Arkansas agricultural documents are now available digitally. The University of Arkansas Libraries has digitized over 34,000 pages of the Arkansas Extension circulars. Those circulars have been published since the 1880s. The completion is the first of a three-part project that will also include the digitization of the Arkansas Agricultural Experiment Station Bulletin and other publications. The process has been made possible by a grant from Project Ceres, named for the ancient goddess of agriculture. And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals will attempt to make it two wins in a row at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale tonight. Last night, the Nats defeated Midland 11-5 in Springdale to snap a four-game losing streak. Tonight's game is scheduled for a 7:05 first pitch.
Support for 91.3 comes from Arcom Plus, providing digital and offset printing, graphic design, and promotional items, and a variety of business services for jobs of all sizes. Located just off College Avenue at 461 East Township in Fayetteville, Arcom has been locally owned and operated for over 25 years. Printing NWA.com or 444-7711. Additional support provided by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include radiation, CLIA-certified labs, a multidisciplinary lung clinic, and a lung cancer screening program. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Walton Arts Center proudly presents a new season of arts and entertainment for Northwest Arkansas. Tickets for the 2017-18 season, including Broadway, music, comedy, family entertainment, and the 10x10 Arts Series, on sale now. Tickets and information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, we remember Arkansas native Glenn Campbell, who sold more than 45 million records worldwide, starred in not one but two movie adaptations of fellow Arky native Charles Portis novels, True Grit and Norwood, and also hosted the top 15 ranked Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour for four seasons on CBS. On tomorrow's edition of Ozarks, Stephen Cook, the producer of Arkansas Songs, takes a look back at Glenn Campbell's career. That and much more on Ozarks at Large, tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. Glenn Campbell died yesterday. By the way, you can also listen to our show as an absolutely free podcast available through services like iTunes and Stitcher. And if you want to find past editions of the show or individual stories, you can always go to KUAF.com or Ozarks at Large.
I know I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain.
Republicans dominate the legislature in Texas, but there's a split between social conservatives pushing a bill that bans transgender access to bathrooms and lawmakers like Joe Strauss, the Speaker of the House.
I think Texans want our legislature to be solving problems that they know really exist.
I'm Ari Shapiro. The impasse in the Texas Capitol this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. And before we end this midweek edition of Ozarks at Large, a few things to remember to put on your calendar. Expressionist artist Taylor Moore will host an artist reception and meet and greet at DeVito's in Eureka Springs a week from tonight, August 16th from 5 until 8 p.m. That reception is absolutely open to the public. Speaking of Carroll County, you can join the Berryville Community Center on August 19th. That's a Saturday from 1 until 5 for free family-friendly events organized by the Carroll and Madison Library System. So there will be information about the science of the sun in preparation for the solar eclipse a couple days after that, August 21st. Have you heard? There's a solar eclipse. Visitors will receive a pair of free eclipse viewing glasses. If you'd like more information about this free event in Berryville, you can go online to eurekalibrary.org or call 253-8754. And you can join the Photographic Society of Northwest Arkansas as members gather in Marshall, Missouri to photograph the, wait for it, solar eclipse on Monday, August 21st. You'll need to purchase your own parking pass, which reserves a spot, for information, including items you'll need to properly photograph the eclipse, psnwa.org. And the free lecture, Eclipses, Science and Safety, will be presented by Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, August 15th. That's a Tuesday night at 6 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. She is from the University of Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Science, and will discuss the science surrounding eclipses and share tips on how to safely enjoy the upcoming solar eclipse. I don't know if I've mentioned this, but it's August 21st. All right, a service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Cane Hill. We will end today's show with music from Caleb Ryan Martin. You've got a chance to see him tomorrow night at the Dixon Street Pub in Fayetteville. He'll start playing music at 8:30. Friday night, he moves north a little bit for the Core Public House on Emma in Springdale. That will begin Friday night at 7. He'll be with Grassfed, who's coming in from Kansas City. And if you need a reason to go to Taos, New Mexico, well, he'll be at the Taos Mesa Room Tap Room on September 5th. This is Caleb Ryan Martin performing the song Rose Connolly. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening.
Time's getting hard. I can feel it in my bones. I run my life from my soul. Eyes turn gray and I can't see straight, and I'm walking a lonesome road. Don't weep for me, I beg you please, I know just where I'm bound. You come for me late tomorrow, and I lie next to her in the ground. I've done, the devil, he waits for me, and I'm gonna hang on a scaffold high for murdering Miss Rose Connolly. For Irene Gray, what I've done, the devil, he waits for me, and I'm gonna hang on a scaffold high for murdering Miss Rose Connolly. Don't weep for me, I beg you please, I know just where I'm bound. They'll come for me late tomorrow, and I'll lie next to her in the ground. And don't weep for me, I beg you please, I know just where I'm bound. They'll come for me late tomorrow, and I'll lie next to her.